Same.
The same money they would count to count how many people though.
Yes, absolutely. Same census money. Correct. Correct. All right, Tavosa, good morning. Let's begin. So we left off yesterday. Still skull. We left off yesterday on Dalet Amud Beis, actually by the two dots. Ha'achin v'ashutvin. So if you remember again, the Mishnah. Remember again, the Mishnah made the statement about brothers who inherited an estate and how the Maisa, again, depending on the nature of their relationship, would impact Maiser Behema versus and Kalbo. So the Gemara now quotes over here, Achen v'hashutfin shechayovin v'kalbo u'peturmi Maiser Behema. So there are two cases. The cases are brothers who are partners, which means they're partners in the estate, who are chayiv in kalbon. Remember, kalbon is our additional amount that are paying with the half shekel that we spoke about yesterday. Uputurmi ma'aser behema, but yet they would be exempt from ma'aser behema on the estate's flock. Now, how would that happen? Kishecholku, that would be a situation where they divided the estate. The chazru v'nishtatfu, that would be a case of where they dissolved the estate and then what? And then reconstituted a new partnership. Now, we'll say, look at the Tikvin Charetin for just a moment. So it's all the way, bless you, on the left-hand side in the Tikvin Charetin, five lines up from the bottom. Kishecholku v'chazru v'nishtatfu, as him chayovin v'kalbo. So in this case, again, I will say, so they inherited an estate. Now, you have to understand something. An inherited estate by itself, when the brothers first inherited, is not considered like a partnership. It's actually in halacha considered to be like its own entity, which the truth is, I think it's true in legal terms as well. There's a concept of an estate in probate, which means, again, that before everyone figures out exactly what it is that's theirs, there's an estate, and then everybody has to claim their parts. In halacha, a father dies. Again, using our simple case from yesterday, where let's say the oldest child is a sister. So biblically, again, she's not involved in inheritance. Two younger brothers, they're going to share it 50-50. They're going to share, they have to support their sister, but they're going to share the estate 50-50. So when they first inherit it, they each have ownership in every little thing. So everything is joint. Then at some point in time, they actually divide the estate. And then the Gemara's case over here is where they then choose to forge a partnership again. So Tiklin Chanetin says, Kishechoku v'chazu v'nishtatu, asim chayavim v'kalbon. In that case, they're chayavim v'kalbon. The Kishechoku v'nosn in stela shalim v'shil shneim. Because again, when they split the estate, and then let's say one of them were to contribute a sela. Sela, remember, is made up of a two shekel on behalf of both of them. Hu ki'ilu lovin zemizeh. It's as if they're borrowing, they're lending to each other. U'mimaisra behema peturim. So they'll be chayiv in kalbo. They'll be chayiv in kalbo because even if one brother goes ahead and contributes on behalf of the other, lemaisa, that is considered as if he's loaning the other brother a half a shekel, which we discussed yesterday, is still chayiv in kalbo. But yet again, they'll be potter from maaser behema. Why? The eder shall shut him potter mi maaser behema. So this is very interesting because the halacha by maaser behema is jointly owned animals are exempt from maaser behema. And again, he quotes the pasuk over here, "Design of Bechoros, Kol Peter Shegar Behima Asher Yihye Lecha." When the Torah sees a Maaser Behima, it phrases it in the singular, that which belongs to you. So the Gemara learns out that any animal that's jointly owned is potter from Maaser Behima. So therefore, again, because they reconstituted the partnership, therefore Lemaisa Yachayv and Kalvon potter from Maaser Behima. Back up top, back to the Gemara. Shechayovin be Maaser Behima p'turmin a Kalvon. What's the case of where they're chayv and Maaser Behima and potter from Kalvon? B'shalochilku. That's the case of also where what? Where they did not go ahead and divide the estate. So therefore they are still in this, they are still in this state of joint partnership. Still in the state of joint partnership. So correct. So Lamaisa, again, because the estate, the undivided estate, has the identity of one entity, and therefore it's Chayv and Maaser Behema, but it's part from Kalbon. Because Lamaisa, again, neither is viewed as contributing a personal sela. So the Gemara goes weiter. Rabbi Lazer said, "V'hein shechalkub." Now Rabbi Lazer is going to qualify which case this is true in. Hein shechalku gedim keneged hayashim, uti yashim keneged gedim. This is only true if what? If when they divide the estate, so one brother gets the kids and another brother gets the rams. Right? Meaning that literally they're dividing it in such a way where each one is getting something separate. That's a clear division and a clear dissolution. The word dissolution. Dissolution of the original estate and then reconstituting of a new partnership. However, but if they're sharing in everything, it's just an expression. If they're sharing in everything, meaning they're being mechalik in every single thing, then he chelko misha harishona. So listen, this is very interesting. In that case, where they share everything, then that type of split or that type of division ultimately is considered to be a retroactive clarification of what the estate originally was. So it's actually interesting. If you take a look at the last Tikkun Charetin, Avalim Cholku, Dizehu Mishpat HaYerusha, L'chol Echot, Chelek V'chol Minumin. Because if they're literally splitting everything, 50-50, that's how Yerusha works. Technical biblical Yerusha means, as you said before, that everybody has a Chelek in everything. The Omrim Zeu Chalka Magia, the Yesh Breira. We would say that's retroactively clarified that indeed was the Breira portion, the Adayim Shem Yarshim Aleim. Therefore, they don't have the status of partners, they have the status of inheritors. And therefore, when they go ahead and they join forces again, this is not considered to be a reconstituting of the partnership, but rather, again, this is what? This is ultimately just a clarification of the original estate. And therefore, lemaisa, what that would mean practically would be that halach lemaisa, they'd be chayiv in maiser behema and pater from kalbom. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, not true. Even if they went ahead and they shared in everything, that's what it means. Literally, they literally means they split up the kids against the kids, the animal kids, not the real. Split up the kids against the kids and the rams against the rams. What that means is they're sharing in everything. Rabbi Yochanan says that kilikucho same trumin amaiser. They are considered to be literally like purchasers, and therefore, if they were to reconstitute the partnership, they're considered to be like purchasers from one another, and therefore, the animals are exempted from maiser. Kiai kihahu ditaninan kamon, as we learned later on, halakuach. This is an untithed animal that was purchased, vishenite lebamatana, or an untithed animal that was given as a gift. Potter mi maiser behema. So we'll say these types of animals are exempted from maiser behema. So Rabbi Yochanan is taking this even a step further. Rabbi Yochanan says that even when they divide up the estate, so the mice, again, neither is chayiv to tithe their animals, because the mice, again, when you purchase an untithed animal, that animal is exempted from future tithing. Rabbi Chiya, last two lines, Dalet Amud Beis. Rabbi Chiya, Am Rabbi Yirmiyah, boy, velama les nan amrin. Why don't we say? There are times in this type of situation, this estate type of situation, where you would be chayiv in both kalbon as well as maaser behema, top of hem and dal for both sides. And there are other times where you'll be exempted from both of these things. Skip rabosai the parentheses. So you're going to skip the last word on the first line, second line, third line, and first three words of the fourth line. So what would be the case? If you split up the property and did not split up the animals, so then what's the halacha? You'll be chayiv in both kalbon as well as maaser behema. Mosai, look at the Tiklin Charetin. You see the Tiklin Charetin over there? He's sandwiched. He's not sandwiched. He's on the right-hand side beneath the Karban Aida and the Revivan. So look at the second one. In Helchi Garcina, Chalku es HaBehima, Velo Chalku es HaNechasim. If they split up, this is the next one. Excuse me. So let's go back a little bit. So if you went ahead and, I read two lines. Let's go back for one second in the Gemara. Fourth line down from the top, Hey Madalef. Let's read these cases again. Chalku anachasim velo chalku abehema. If they split up the property and did not go ahead and split up the animals, this is in the estate, chayavin baze obaze. There'll be a chiyah for both kabon as well as maaser behema. On the other hand, chalkwa behema below chalkwa sanachasim. If they split up the animals but did not split up the property, then peturim mizeh umizeh, they'll be exempt. Now look at the tiklin chadatin. Says tiklin chadatin. It's on the first line where it says hey gimahochi garcinon chalkwa sabehema below chalkwa sanachasim peturim bazeh umizeh. Dechevan shechalku bebehema, because since they're splitting up the livestock of the estate, the chazru v'nishtatfu, and they go ahead and they reconstitute a partnership. Havi le'inyan meiser behema, excuse me, havi le'inyan meiser behema, kishutfin upturimi meiser. So both say, so that we understand, in a situation where they divide up the animals of the estate amongst themselves and then reconstitute a partnership, we've already established that point. We'll say there's one thing to walk away with is that jointly owned animals are exempt from meiser behema. So that's an easy one. Ubinachasim shelo chilku, adayim shem tefusas habayis aleim upatur mikalbon. So we'll say again, and if they didn't split up the rest of the property, then there's no obligation of kalbon, because again, lemaisa, that's still called estate property and not personal property. So technically speaking, if you were to take a shekel from that estate and go ahead and give it on behalf of the two brothers, that would not be subject to kalbon, because only a shekel that comes from an individual, not an estate, is chayiv in kalbon. The Hakamash Malon, the Amirim in the Tichlin Chanatin still. The Hakamash on the Sakadet Chamino, the Lonoko Kulihai, the Chayvan the Chalku art. Actually, it should be, we don't have to do the rest. Fine. So the Gemara says the following. Amar Admona, Hada the At Amar, Mishalo Haisa Behema Rov. So when do we make this distinction? So most I see what the Gemara just did before, and is the Gemara made a distinction between splitting up animals and splitting up property. So when do they make these types of distinctions? That's only if livestock is not the majority of the estate. Aval im haisa habehemaro, but if the animals are in fact the majority of the estate, heim ikir nechasim. Then the reality is, see, also here's another interesting just idea in estate law. So which is that, well, we don't necessarily accept this halacha l'maaseh, but for these purposes, if the livestock is the majority of the estate, then we don't look at splitting up of the property and splitting up of the animals, but rather we solely focus on the animals, because ultimately the division of the animals is considered to be a division of the estate. Rabbi Abin Amarab Simi, Boi Mipnei Sha'asisen Ka'adam Echad Eitzel Meister Behema. At potro mina kalbon. So we'll say now these other opinions come along and say, I don't understand. Because you made them like one person, i.e. that because it's a partnership, and you exempted them by Meister Behema, therefore you have to exempt them from kalbon as well. So the Gemara says, look at the Tiklin Charetin, Rab Simi Boi, Amas Nisin Parich, Vika'amar lo chalku pitur mina kalbon. So remember, we said before that Lamaisa, if they did not divide up the estate, then they're parted from Kalbon. Amarle lo shanya, are they not different? Lo shanyahi, shehu nosin sela echad shelema. Because ultimately, what's happening over here? They are really like strangers who entered into a partnership, and the original state is not put back together. That's, well, actually, we'll get to that later on. This, what he's saying over here is, he says, hu shenosin sela echad shelema, ultimately means they're going ahead and they're giving one seller from an undivided estate. So when you give one seller from an undivided estate, yes, the halacha is going to be that you're not going to be subject to kalbon, because kalbon is a personal tax that is levied against the half shekel. But if the origin of the half shekel is not an individual but it's an estate, there's no kalbon. So he goes weiter. Me'ata afilu chalku v'chazru v'nishtatfu chayovin v'kalbon upturin mimaiser behema. If that's the case, then lemaisa, then lemaisa, even in a situation of where they split up the estate, then they reconstituted a new partnership, they should be chayiv in meiser behema and pater from kalbon. Stigmar says utaninon chayovin bekalbon upater meiser behema. But we know in fact that that's not true in a situation where lemaisa, and I both say this is the bottom line. The bottom line is that halacha lemaisa, when two brothers, and I'm just using the case of two brothers because it's just easy for illustration purposes, but it's even more siblings. Two brothers inherit an estate. So lemaisa, again, in the inherited form, the livestock is subject to meiser behema, but the half shekel is not subject to kalbon. When they split up their estate, again, there are two possibilities when you split up an estate as to what can happen. Possibility number one is what? Each brother goes his own way. And if each brother goes his own way, that case is easy. because then you're chayv in kalbo, and what? And you're chayv in meiser behema. But if they choose to go, because again, remember, because kalbo, here's what it comes down to. The common denominator between kalbo and meiser behema is that both are only applicable when you're talking about an individual. When you have joint property or property belonging to an estate, sometimes they're not always applicable. So again, let's just discuss quickly the three cases. Case number one is when father dies, brothers inherit the estate. Undivided estate is considered to be in halacha like a separate entity, chayiv in meiser behema, but pater from kalbo. Brothers divide the estate. Two possibilities. If they each go their own way, then each brother is subject to kalbo and subject to meiser behema. If they choose to reconstitute a partnership, then the only thing that changes is what? Is almost like a partnership is a tax shelter for meiser behema. So right, you don't have to pay meiser behema from a partnership. And again, that's just based on the pasuk that the Torah phrases meiser behema in the singular. And therefore, jointly owned property is not subject to meiser behema, but is subject to kalbo. Fine. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Ba, B'shem Rabbi Abba Barafunahi, Shnei Achim Sheyarshu Esavihen. So two brothers that inherited their father, they're like Hishne Gisin Sheyarshu Chamehen. They're like two sons-in-law that inherited their father-in-law. What does it mean about saying? They're just like two sons-in-law that inherited their father-in-law. There's no relationship there. There's no relationship, meaning there's no familial, there's an extended relationship, but there's no blood relative relationship. So too, even when two brothers go ahead and inherit their father, when they dissolve the estate, and bless you, and then reconstitute a partnership, they are just like two strangers who entered into a partnership, meaning there's nothing different about two brothers who create a partnership based on estate property than strangers who create a partnership with each other. The only unique aspect of it is when they first inherit. But once they divide, dissolve the estate, reconstitute a new partnership, it doesn't make a difference that they're brothers with their father's property. They're no different than anyone else. Now the Gemara goes full circle. And some of you asked this yesterday. Le'echan hayu ha-kablanos noflin. Where did kalbon go? Where did kalbon go? Meaning, what was kalbon used for? So you remember, Rabbi saying one of the reasons we didn't have to address this yesterday is because of the opinion of Rabbi Meir. What did Rabbi Meir say? Good. What Rabbi Meir said was, we did a lesson 24 hours ago. It is 6 months. Right, because Rabbi Meir was the one who said that the whole point of kalbon was because our half shekel is not the same weight as the half shekel of the desert. So it doesn't really matter what you mean. It just goes into the pot. It goes into the same pot. His whole chap was, remember, what did God say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Ze yitnu. Ze, I know, you're all very humble. Ze yitnu. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to give this exact half shekel. So Rabbi Meir said the kalbon was there to just help bolster the weight of the mishneik half shekel. But not everybody agrees with that. So according, if you don't agree with that, so then what is kalbon going for? So listen to this. So this is very interesting. Le'echan, as well, as you've seen already, part of the difficulty in Yerushalmi is that they had a different way of speaking. So le'echan is le'echan. Le'echan, where did it, bless you, where did it go? Le'echan hayu ha-kalbonos noflim. Rabbi Meir Omer, le'shkalim. Rabbi Meir says, I don't understand, what's the big deal? It was part of shkalim. It was part of shkalim. Now both sides, look what the Tiklin Charetin says. Tiklin Charetin, Rabbi Meir Omer, le'shkalim. Rabbi Meir le'tanei, da'amer le'el, kishem sheshiklo Torah, kach kolbono Torah. Rabbi Meir is one who says, what's the kasha? It goes into the same pot with everything else. Because remember, Rabbi Meir is one who says that the kalbon is there to make sure that Mishneik shekel is the same thing as biblical shekel. But listen to this. It's very interesting. Rabbi Lezer says, Linedava. It actually goes Linedava. And I will say, what's Linedava? There was a different pot. If you remember, again, we actually learned already back in our Pesachim days that there's something called Ketzam Mizbeach. Ketzam Mizbeach literally means like the dessert for the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach was never supposed to be idle. So what happens? It's hard to imagine that there were ever times when there were not karbanos being offered, but if for some reason there weren't, there was a karban fund. So if for some reason the mizbeach was dormant, the kohanim would go and they would take another animal and offer it up on the karban. The money for that animal came from a nedava fund. Now we'll see. Interestingly enough, what funded the nedava fund? It was often leftover shkalim, because not all of the half shekels were necessary to fund the communal karbanos throughout the year. So here, Rabbi Lezer says that the kalbon goes into the nedava fund. Next, Rabbi Shimon Shizuri Omer, somebody mentioned this yesterday. Actually, not this one. Rabbi Shimon Shizuri Omer, Rikui Zahav Vitzipui Lebeis Kodesh HaKadoshim. You know what it was used for? We'll say it's very interesting. We know that the outer Mizbeach, the inner Mizbeach, was a gold Mizbeach. Gold plating, something that has to be replaced. The inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was also made of gold plating. So some say that this money was used, that if gold plating had to be replaced, this would be the funds for the gold plating. Okay. Ben Azai Omer, Shulchanin Hayu Notan Osim B'scharan. Ben Azai says this was actually the fee for the money changers. Because remember again, we spoke about yesterday, these money changers are deployed throughout the land. And as much as I'm sure, again, they're going to do it at reduced rates, L'maisa, you have to give them something. So this, because remember, again, this is going on for a while. So their fee was, they got a kalbon fee from every transaction. V'yesh omrim, others say, no, it wasn't the fee as much as it was lotzas drachim to pay for their expenses. Because again, a money changer often had to travel somewhere else. So they took care of the travel expenses.
So we're talking about the money changers who got paid
for the kalbonos. No, for the half shekel. For the half shekel. People would come with larger denominations of coins and they'd have to get the half shekel. Hadron aloch, be'ech perek, be'ech ba'adr. We'll say mazel tov, our first perek. Says the Mishnah, halacha aleph. Okay, that was a quick celebration. Says the Mishnah, mitzarfin shkalim ledarkonos mipnei masui haderech. Now we're going to get into a little bit more of the logistics. This is quite fascinating as well. So imagine the following scene. Remember, we spoke about the idea that shulchanios, these money changers, were deployed all across the land. So now you're set up in Tel Aviv, and what happens? Now somebody's got to take the coins from Tel Aviv to the Beis HaMikdash. So what the Mishnah now says is something very interesting. They were permitted to go ahead and exchange the half shekel coins for larger denomination coins. So for example, this darkonos, each darkon was made up of two sela. Each sela is made up of two shekel. So ultimately, again, each darkon is eight shekel. Four shekel, excuse me. Right, correct. Each darkon is two sela. Each sela is two shekel. Four shekel, thank you. Four shekel. So you could cut down, you could obviously cut down significantly the amount of coins you actually have to carry with you. Mipnei masui haderech, in order to lighten the load. Kashim shayu shofros b'mikdash. We'll see. Shofros actually means a collection box. We'll discuss exactly why they call the collection box a shofar. We'll get into that. But the same way, actually, already take a look at the Tikman Charetin. He says here, shofros, tevos shepi and sar limalo, umarti vaholich kain shofar kadesh lo yuchlu lito mehem klum, vayo umdin ba'azara. The whole echad maybe shiklov and osim. So we'll say it's very interesting. They used to make their collection boxes narrow at the top and wide at the bottom. Why? Because this way no one could put their hand in and take anything. It also, by the way, it's more than just also not taking anything. We're not necessarily hoping somebody's going to steal, but we'll see also that for temple purposes, it was very important that there should be even no possibility of misappropriation. So by making the collection boxes smaller, way there's no way that anyone could take anything. So they would put out. So by the money changers, they would put out these collection boxes. They would put out these collection boxes. Now we'll discuss what those collection boxes were for. So kishim shayu shofros b'medosh kacha yushofros b'medina b'nei ha'ir. So we'll say another very interesting case. B'nei ha'ir sheshalchu es shiklehen. Listen to this. So imagine the following scene. So we're living in Tel Aviv. And what happens? We send our half shekel with Ruvain. And what happens? V'nignevu osha'avdu. Well, so listen to this. And Ruvain gets mugged. Right? Mamish, he gets mugged. So all the half shekel are gone. So either or he lost. Or he lost the half shekel. He went in to get a cup of coffee. And he left the mule running. And he left the half shekel. There he comes back and it's gone. So what happens? Listen to this. Im nitshama hatshuma. So now I'll say the shayla is, what's the obligation? Who is obligated? Im nitshama hatshuma. So I'll say, listen to this. Remember, we spoke about this idea already in passing a couple of days ago, that all money had to be in, was supposed to be in by the first of Nisan. But the reality was what? That they never had all money in at the first of Nisan. But what would happen? When they would, remember, we also pointed out they drew funds three times a year. When they did that first withdrawal, they had in mind for everyone. they had in mind for all of Klal Yisrael, which meant that even if your money was not yet in, you were still included in communal karbanos, because withdrawing the money was behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. We know your money is going to get there, so we are proactively drawing on your account, even though your money is not in there. So says the Mishnah like this: if they already withdrew money from the temple funds for communal service, for communal sacrifices, in that case, I will say, then that's already Beis HaMikdash money that was lost. That's already Beis HaMikdash money. If that's the case, Nishba'in Legizbarin. Then Rabosai, the Ruvain, who is again the messenger, has to swear. The Gizbar, we'll talk about him extensively, is essentially the temple CFO, right? He is the temple treasurer. So the messenger has to swear to the Gizbar that what? That he in no way misappropriated or was not negligent with the money. V'imlav, and if not means if they did not yet do the withdrawal. Like, let's say, for example, when did the withdrawal occur? The withdrawal occurred, remember, 15 days before each Yontif, 15 days before each Regel. So let's say now it's the day before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So no money has yet been withdrawn from temple treasury. In that case, Rabosai, then who does that money really belong to? That money belongs to us, the people of Tel Aviv, who sent him. Because again, it's not consecrated yet. Ve'imlav nishbo'in l'bnei ha'ir. Then Reuven the messenger has to swear to the members of the town whose money he was taking that, again, he did not steal the money or was not negligent with the money. And in that case, ubnei ha'ir shoklin tachtein. And I will say, what has to happen in that case? We have to give half shekel again. See, interestingly enough, if you take a look, shoklin achirim tachtein, sheshkalim harishurim sheshaklu, lo alu lahen. Because ultimately, Lemaisa, the first shekels that we gave did not accomplish their goal. They never reached the Beis HaMikdash. They were never consecrated in any way. And therefore, Lemaisa, we have to give another half shekel. So he goes weiter. Nimtzu Oshech Jemaganavim. Let's say again, they find the lost shekelim, or the thieves have a change of heart and return the stolen shekelim. So now I will say again, in this case now, remember, we pledged a second shekel already. So now what happens? So that's the halacha. Elu v'elu shekelim. Both are considered to be half shekels, but ve'ein olim lahen l'shana haba. I will say, very interesting, but yet we'll see that the recovered shekelim, you can't credit them. You have to give them to the Beis HaMikdash, but you can't credit them, bless you, towards next year's payments. So we'll discuss what you ultimately do with them. So it says the Gemara, v'yasu osam margolios. So going back to the first statement of Mishnah. So the Mishnah said that l'maisa, we allow you to go ahead and turn, essentially convert the shkalim into larger denominations of coins in order to lighten low. So the Gemara says, I have a better idea. Why don't you convert them into jewels, into gems? Right, margolios means like literally precious stones. Because let's say, imagine you could go ahead and convert all of the shkalim of a town on a diamond, on one diamond, for argument's sake. And that's certainly much easier to transport than a sack of coins. So the Gemara says, "Yasu osa margolios, bless you." Shematazah hamargolios in tzehekdish mafsid. Because what could happen, Abosai? Because jewels can depreciate, and because they can depreciate, ultimately the Beis HaMikdash will suffer a loss. Meaning, when I leave Tel Aviv with the diamond, half of the residents of Tel Aviv, the diamond is worth $10,000, and again, by the time I get to Yerushalayim, it's worth $9,500. So the Maase again, and who suffered that loss? That's the Beis HaMikdash suffers that loss. So he says, "Kahahi detanina taman," like we learned later on. Bekulon niftin bekesef or beshava kesef. Anything, Rabosai, that has sanctity that you want to redeem can be redeemed with money or with an item of value. Chutz mishkalim, with the exception of the half shekel. Ve'in poldin bekelim. You can't redeem consecrated things with a utensil. Va'amr Rab Shmuel bar Yitzchok shema yazilu hakelim. V'nim tzehekdish mafsid. And why is that? Out of a concern that, Rabosai, if you redeem consecrated items with the utensil, what will happen? The utensil will lose its value. And Rabbi Osai, who suffers the loss? The Beis HaMikdash suffers its loss. Well, so just you should know, it's a very interesting halachic discussion in terms of investing, let's say, for a Jewish organization, in terms of investing money in different financial instruments. Right? It's a fascinating discussion in terms of how much risk is one permitted to take with consecrated funds. Let's say I have a Jewish organization and I have $100,000. Am I permitted to go ahead and make a risky investment that on one hand can have an incredible payoff, but on the other hand can leave my investment less? And remember, if my investment is less, I've essentially lost Ma'os HaKadosh, consecrated money. So not for today, but it's just interesting to see that even in times of the Mishnah, they're struggling with that same issue. So the Gemara goes weiter. Uf hacha nami, so too over here. Uf means like so too. Uf. Get out of your vocabulary. Uf hacha nami, shamataza hamargolio, so too over here, even though it certainly would be much easier for transport to go ahead and redeem the, or transfer the sanctity of the half shekels onto a jewel. Lemaisa, because of the concern of depreciation, therefore nimtza hekdesh mafsid. And because of that, so too we don't do it. So we'll go ahead and we'll redeem the half shekels onto larger denominations of coins, but not onto jewels, not onto utensils, not onto anything with its possibility of depreciation. Masnisa betiklin chadetin. Now we'll say, now you see, by the way, where the Perush gets its name from. Our Mishnah is talking about new shkolim. Aval tiklin atikin lo. But old shkolim not. Now what does this mean? Take a look at the tiklin chadetin. So what is it? Masnisin viktani shahayu shofros b'medina dafka letiklin chadetin. I will say, when the Mishnah said before that they set up these collection boxes all across them, wherever there was a shulchani, that was for new shkalim. That were now, what are new shkalim? The hindu shkalim shoshana haba, shkalim for the coming year. Avalatiklin atikin. But also, here's what's interesting. What inevitably happened? People forgot to contribute their past half shkalim. They just forgot. So what would happen? Often, so now let's say I'm coming. It's gonna be tav shenayin dalit. I'm coming on the 15th of Adar to contribute my half shekel for the 5774 year. And I realize, you know, I never gave one for 5773. So what am I going to do? I'm going to give my past half shekel also. That's called tiklin atikin. That's called an old shekel. Dahainu lemi shelo shekel ishtakid lo haya shofros b'medina el tzarech la'avil ha'mikdash dafka. So also we will see that if you did not pay last year's shekel, you still have to contribute it. But in order to contribute that, where do you have to go? You have to go to the Beis HaMikdash. That you can't, even though they had collection boxes were only for new shkolim. For old shkolim, you had to go to the Beis HaMikdash itself. So the Gemara says, for old shkolim, you cannot use the collection boxes. The Tani Kain Atikin, Tani Kain, we learned this as well. Atikin b'mikdash, v'ein atikin b'medina. You could contribute old shkolim in the Beis HaMikdash. Again, old shkolim is not a statement about the quality of the coin. But remember, it's a statement of last year's. You could contribute last year's shekel on the Beis HaMikdash, but not in the Medina. Now the Gemara says something very interesting. Masnisin b'shomer chino. Remember again, I'll say, what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah talked about the shomer who lost the shkolim on the way to the Beis HaMikdash. So what the Mishnah seemed to indicate is what? That the only variable is, has the Beis HaMikdash withdrawn money yet for the karbanos? Because that will determine who the shomer has to take an oath to. But here's what's interesting, which is there is no discussion about the shomer being chayiv for anything. But I will say what the Mishnah is describing. Again, we're familiar with this concept of shomrim. Says a shomer chinam and a shomer sachar. A shomer chinam is an unpaid custodian. Shomer sachar is a paid custodian. A shomer chinam is pretty. An unpaid custodian is potter for everything except pshia, except for negligence. If he's negligent, then he's chayiv for that. A shomer sachar, a paid custodian, is chayiv for pretty much everything, with the exception of ones, with the exception of some unavoidable circumstance. So the Gemara therefore says, masnisin b'shomer chinam. It must say the Mishnah is talking about a shomer chinam, about a shomer sachar, but with a shomer sachar, a paid custodian, lo b'da. The Mishnah would not be true. Why? Because with a shomer sachar, he would be obligated if he left, you know, if it got stolen from him, let me say he would be chayiv to go ahead and compensate. Again, it depends on who he has to compensate. Does he have to compensate the Beis HaMikdash? Does he have to compensate the townspeople? Amar Rav, Rav says not necessarily. But he'll turn b'shomer sachar. The Mishnah can even talk about shomer sachar. What's the case? Nignevu b'listim mizuyin. Because the way the Mishnah talks about the items being stolen, how was it stolen? Through armed robbers. Now, Rabbi Osai, getting skin held up by armed robbers is considered to be an ones. There's no way for me to prevent that. I can't fight back. Nothing I can do. That's extenuating circumstances. Even if I'm a paid custodian, I would still be exempt from liability in that case. Or avdu, the case of where I lost, it could be where? Kamisha tavos svinaso bayam. Like where my boat sunk. That's ones, obviously. So the point that Gemara is just making is, the Mishnah could be understood as talking about a shomer chinam or a shomer sachar. Amar Rav Yusti, Barab Simon. The Mishnah clearly reflects the view that when they withdraw money from the treasury, they withdraw it with the intent to cover that which will be collected in the future as well. I mean, I will say again, the fact that I am included in that first withdrawal, even though my money has not yet reached the Beis HaMikdash, indicates that when they withdraw money, it's done on those who have contributed and with the intention for those who will contribute. Baram keman da'amar, ein torim lo ala gavoy, lo ala gibor, velo ala asid legavos, lo bida. But obviously our Mishnah does not work according to the opinion that says that no, when they withdraw money, it's only done for those who have actually contributed. So we'll see this machlokas a little bit later on. But the Mishnah clearly reflects one of the opinions, namely that when they do the withdrawal, it's done on behalf of everyone, both those who have already made their contribution and those who have not yet made their contribution. Bnei ha'ir sheshloch l'shikleihem. Amar Rabbi Elazar, d'Rab Shimoni. D'Rab Shimon Omer, chodshim shuchayiv ba'achrayusan, kinechasein. I will say, here's what's interesting. So what does Rabbi Elazar say? Rabbi Elazar says, actually, Rabbi Shimon says, if you take a look at the last line of the Tiklin Charetin, d'Rab Shimon he says, chodisnan b'masnisin, da'ashomrim nishboim, d'Rab Shimon de'im lokein ha'kaim alon inishbar ala kadeshos. I will say, normally we have a rule when it comes to Shavua, is that we don't take Shavuos regarding consecrated properties. We'll discuss where that concept comes from, but right now we'll just take it as a statement of fact, that you don't take a Shavua about consecrated properties. And yet here what's happening in the Mishnah, clearly the Shomer is taking Shavuos on consecrated property. So this must reflect the view of Reb Shimon, and Reb Shimon says that when you have consecrated items, that you are chayiv for achrayis, that you're chayiv, you are responsible for them, then lemaisa you are able to go out and take a shavua for them. So even though it's consecrated, but since I'm responsible for it, in this case again, I'm responsible for it until it reaches the actual Beis HaMikdash, therefore I can take a shavua on that, even though we don't normally take a shavua by consecrated property. That's one possibility. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, divrei akoli, mishum shavuas takana. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says no. You know what's happening over here? This is a rabbinic shvuah. This is not a biblical shvuah that the Shomer is taking. It's a biblical. It's a rabbinic shvuah. And why is it a rabbinic? Because biblically, you wouldn't take a shvuah. Why? Because we don't take a shvuah on consecrated property. But rabbinically, there is a shvuah. Why? Because we want the Shomer to take his job seriously. So the Gemara says the following. Adas Rabbi Yochanan necha nishboin ligizbar. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, it makes sense why the Shomer would take a Shavua to the Gizbar. Remember, I will say that's the case where the withdrawal already occurred. So I didn't say I was going to take a Shavua to the Gizbar. The imlav, and if the money has not yet been withdrawn, the Shavua in the Ha'ir. I understand that because according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's what's called Shavua Stakana. It's a rabbinic Shavua because the Shomer has to know that if something happens to the money, he's going to have to take a Shavua to someone. However, the imlav, nishpalim in the Ha'ir. Ubnei Ha'ir, shoklin achreim tachtein, amun beis. And Bnei Ha'ir, the people of the city, will have to go ahead and separate out another chatzi shekel. Mishum shvuas takana. And I will say, why is that? Ultimately, again, it's a rabbinic shvua. Elo l'Rabbi Lezer. Nishpo ilim Bnei Ha'ir. Hadohi. The Rabbi Shimon. So, according to Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Lezer is the one who quoted Rabbi Shimon before, and Rabbi Shimon was the one who said, what's Rabbi Osai? That even though you don't normally take a Shavua on consecrated property, so this case is a little bit different. Why? Because you're chayiv ba'achrayus, and you're responsible for the property until the property reaches the hands of the Beis HaMikdash. So I understand why he'd have to go ahead and take a Shavua to the townspeople. Because in that case, lemaisa, there's a chiyuv achrayis of the townspeople until when? Until the money either reaches the Beis HaMikdash or withdrawal is made. However, nishpoin legizbarin, gizbarin maya vidatayu. But why would there ever be a case of where you'd be making a shvua to the gizbar? Right? You also, what did the gizbar have to do with this? Why would the shomer be making a shvua to the gizbar? Oh, to which the Gemara says, no. What it means is nishpoin libnei ha'ir b'ma'amad gizbarin. What it means, Rabbi Osai, is that if the Shomer lost the money or the money was stolen after the withdrawal occurred, then the Shomer would have to take a Shavua to the townspeople in the presence of the Gizbarin. So the Gizbarin would come to the town and the Shomer would take a Shavua in front of them, in front of everyone. In order that what? In order that no one should suspect the shomer. Because we'll say, again, you could easily start a very significant racket over here. Right? You could go ahead and essentially hijack the money on the way to the Beis HaMikdash. So you have to, the person has to know that if something happens to the money, he's taking a shvuah to everyone. The gizbar is going to be, the people are going to be there. Furthermore, another possibility is the lo nashvu lohu poshim. The other possibility is that ultimately we don't want anyone to think that this individual is a poshea, that he's negligent. Furthermore, afa pi shekiblu b'nei ha'ir shalem ein ha'hekdish yotzei b'lo shvua. And interestingly enough, one other reason, and this is quite interesting as well, which is that perhaps the other possibility is that hekdish itself, in hekdish yotzei b'lo shvua, that ultimately whenever it comes to hekdish, you're always going to require another shvua on that as well. So apparently the Gemara is giving three different answers, which is two of them are pretty much similar, which is that we want to make sure that the shliach is an upright and honest individual. We also have to understand something, shvua is pretty significant. Shvua requires a Sefer Torah. Shvua requires taking the name of God. So it's a pretty significant step, and Chazal often felt there would be a deterrent against sinful behavior, especially if you're getting the people there, the gizbar there. Furthermore, the other possibility is that any time that you're dealing with hekdish, there's no transference of hekdish without a shvua. Okay, says the Gemara, Vayter. Hifrish shiklo va'avad. And I'm about to say another interesting case. So this is now not a case of where the shomer lost the shekel, but something else. This is where I separated my shekel and I lost it. I misplaced my shekel. Hifrish shiklo va'avad. So I separated out my half shekel and I lost my shekel. Now I'm about to say, look at the Tiklin Charetin for just a moment. Tiklin Charetin writes va'avad. Now, when did I lose it? I lost it before the withdrawal was made in the Beis HaMikdash. The Yesh Mefarshim afil la'achar shenitshma ha'truma. And others say that it's not true even after the withdrawal was made. Rabbosa, you'll see why that makes a difference in just a moment. So here for Shiklo Va'avad. I separated my half shekel. And I lost it. It's in my house. But I lost it. I mean, that's not in my house. I lost it. So Rabbi Yochanan says, listen to this. Chayiv b'achri yusam. Ad shim sren lo gizbar. Rabbi Yochanan says, I am chayiv for that half shekel, for that responsibility, that half shekel, until when? Until it reaches the hands of the Beis HaMikdash. That's it. So it's my responsibility until it gets to the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, if anything happens to it, I have to replace it. Rabbi Shimon Lakish says, listen to this. Hekdish birshus gavoa. Rish Lakish says, no, literally something that is consecrated belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, any place it may be. Look at the Tiklin Charetin for just a moment. We'll say, Rish Lakish makes a fascinating statement. Rish Lakish says that when I consecrate something, essentially what happens? The item is no longer mine. It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, which means that when I lost it, who really lost the Hefshakel? Beis HaMikdash. It's not mine. It's not mine. It belongs to Beis HaMikdash, wherever it may be. And interestingly enough, according to Reish Lakish, this would be true even if I lost it before the first withdrawal in the Beis HaMikdash. He goes on. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah argues on Reish Lakish, because what is the Mishnah saying? Nishbo'in livnei ha'ir u'bnei ha'ir shoklin tachteim. And I will say, what did our Mishnah say, Rabbo, say? In a case where the Shomer lost the city's half shkalim. And what happens? It was before the first withdrawal was made. So what did the Mishnah say? The Shaliach has to take an oath to the members of the city that he didn't misappropriate or steal it. And what? And they have to make up for it. They have to pay a second shekel. So what do you see from there? You see from there that it really is your half shekel until when? One of two things. Either until it reaches the Beis HaMikdash or at least until they do the withdrawal. Lo odu mishum shvuas takana. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, it's really a question. Lo odu mishum shvuas takana. Could it be ultimately that the nature of that the reason for this is because of shvuas takana? Now take a look at the Tiklin Charetin for just a moment. Od shehish mishum shvuas takana. He says kolomar kimo lemalo de shvuas hashlech mishum takana. Hachen nami tashlumen de bnei ha'ir nami mishum takana. Also, the Gemara makes a very interesting suggestion. The Gemara makes a suggestion that maybe when the Mishnah obligates the townspeople to pay again, it's not really because they have to pay again. But just like we make the Shomer take a Shavua in order to make him vigilant with his Shlichus, so why do we make the people pay again? That people should be vigilant with the half shekel. Next time, make sure to trust someone else. Next time, maybe you should drop it off somewhere else. Meaning, so therefore, what we're suggesting is Me'ikar Adin, maybe once you give your half shekel, you're done. You're done. This is the Beis HaMikdash property. But rabbinically, if your shekel never reached the Beis HaMikdash, or if your shekel was lost before the first withdrawal, the rabbi said that what? You have to contribute again in order to teach people a vigilance vis-a-vis the half shekel. Finish up the Tikkun Charetin. However, again, if the Truma is already taken, Kevan de Kari, actually, we'll leave the rest. Fine. So says the Gemara, Tani Harishonim Lovlun Tikkun Charetin, Hashniim Lovlun Tikkun Atikin. And I will say, remember, the last case in the Mishnah was where, let's say, you found, so now, remember, my first half shekel was lost. My first half shekel was lost. And again, let's assume for a moment that took place before the withdrawal in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah told me I have to go ahead and give another half shekel. We've now established that L'maisa, I don't really have to give another half shekel, but rabbinically I'm obligated to. Fine. Then what happens? They find my first half shekel. So what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says, Tani, harishonim noflim tikkun charetin. The first shekel is used for this year's shekel. Vashniim noflim tikkun atikin. And the other shekel, the second shekel, is used in the old shekel collection. As you pointed out before, whatever we're going to use the old shekelim for, we'll discuss. Now, what's the Shaila Rav Ozai? Which one is the first one, and which one is the second one? Says the Gemara, Elu hein rishonim, the Elu hein shniim. Which is considered to be shekel one, which is considered to be shekel two. Rabbi Pinchas, Bei Reb Chia, Rabbi Abba Mari, Chad Amar, Elu sheshalchu b'nei ha'ir tchila. One opinion said, you know what the first shekel is? The first shekel is the chronological first shekel. Right? So again, therefore, the first one I sent out that was lost or that was stolen, that shekel goes towards this year's pot. And then the second one that I gave as a makeup, that'll go to the Tiklin Atikin, that'll go to the old pot. However, V'charna, Amar Charna said, Elu she'gili de'gizborin t'chila. No, the definition of shekel one is what Rabbi say. The definition of shekel one is which everyone reached the Beis HaMikdash first. That's called shekel one. That's one that's going to go for this year's collection. And the second one will ultimately what? The second one will ultimately use for tiklin atik, and that'll go into the old shekel pot. We'll say bepashus is mitzvah that the opinion is going to go like the second one, because the logistical nightmare that the first one wouldn't, that what that would mean is now. Well, I mean, it's not such a crazy logistical nightmare. I don't actually have to go back and get my exact. I'm sorry.
Don't they use it for the census as well for accounting?
That's okay. Meaning at the end of it, there's still going to be a half shekel there.
Right, but if you gave the second one, the second one counts, and then you sent in the first one, and you're putting the first one in that original.
No, then you take out the first. You're only going to have one in the pot.
Right.
There's only going to be one in the new shekel pot, and one's going to go in the old shekel pot. The question is, which one is going where?
Why don't you flip the shekel?
Well, I'm sorry?
Why don't you just flip the shekel?
Flip the shekel. All right. So says the Mishnah. Hanosin shikla lechaver lishka ayadom. Supposed to listen to this. Now we're going to talk about shekel misappropriation. Shekel schemes over here. So says the Mishnah, Hanosin shekel lechaveiro. So I give my shekel to my friend to give on my behalf for my half shekel obligation. And what happens? Hanosin shekel lechaveiro lishka ayado v'shiklo ayade atzmo. And what happens? He uses it for himself. So he uses my half shekel to satisfy his obligation. So we'll say now what the shaila is, what happens? If the withdrawal has already been made, the first withdrawal has already been made at the time when he contributed the shekel, then in essence he's committed ni'ilah. Why, Rabbi Osei? Because remember, what have we already established? When the first withdrawal is made, remember that first withdrawal is made on behalf of who? Of everyone who actually has contributed and will contribute, which means that what occurs to all half shekelim at the time of the first withdrawal, they all become consecrated. Which means that when my friend, my ex-friend, Reuven goes ahead and contributes that half shekel that was mine, but I was contributing it on his behalf, he is actually misappropriating consecrated funds, which means that he has committed mi'ilah. Hashokel shiklo mina hektish. Similarly, if one goes ahead and takes a shekel of hektish, right? V'nitshama hatshuma, v'karva habehema, Ma'al. Rabbi will say another interesting case. If I took a shekel that was already consecrated, half shekel was already consecrated, and I gave it on my behalf. Now, obviously, I'm not allowed to do that, but I gave it on my behalf. And then what happens? The withdrawal was made. An animal was bought with those funds. When the animal is bought, at that point in time, I have committed me'ilah. So me'ilah is not committed at the time of contribution, but rather me'ilah is committed at the time when there's an actual offering that is offered. He goes on, Ma'aser sheni umidmei shavius. If you go ahead and you used money, if you used a half shekel of ma'aser sheni or a half shekel of shvius money, which means shemitah produce, in those cases, yochal kenegdan. We'll discuss what yochal kenegdan literally means. You have to eat a corresponding amount. We'll discuss exactly what that means. Okay. We'll say, take a look for just a moment at the tikkun charetin mina hekdish shahaya biyado maos shehekdish lavede kabayis. I had in my hand money that I consecrated to the Beis Hamikdash. Ukisaver shem shel chulin. I thought that they were chulin, unconsecrated. V'shaklo mehen shkalo. V'nitshar matshuma. V'karna behem va'osa tshuma. V'krivua az nischayva shokel karban meila. Aval kodem lachin lo maol. So we'll see why this is. But interestingly enough, in the case where I contributed an already consecrated coin, l'maisa, again, there's no me'ilah until an actual animal is brought and offered on my behalf. The reason for that is because me'ilah only takes place when you take something that is consecrated and use it for something mundane. However, to take something that's consecrated and transfer it to another state of consecration, that's not called me'ilah. But when that money is used to purchase an animal for my purposes, meaning in this case, my stake in communal carbonos, that is me'ilah. Says the Gemara, Hashokel, Anantaninon, we learned, Im kirvaha behema, vitani debe rebi im nitrama hachuma. It's interesting enough, the Gemara, look at the Tikkun Charetin again. Anantanan, beresha, nitrama chuma, demashma, dema'al tekev, afshalo kirva. The Tani Rebbe Debreisa Gamreisha Vekera. So also interesting enough, remember again, the way the Mishnah reads is that Reuven stole my shekel. I mean, I gave it to him to give on my behalf. When he shows the Beis Hamikdash, he gives it on his behalf. So what did the Mishnah say? If they already made the withdrawal in the Beis Hamikdash, then Lamaisa he has committed Me'ilah. So the Gemara just says, Anantaninon im kirva habehema. Interesting enough, one version of this Mishnah is that the only time Reuven goes in and commits Me'ilah is if they would buy a carbon. When they would buy a carbon and then sacrifice an animal on his behalf, that's when he commits me'ilah. Others say, time to be Rebbe, im nitrama hachuma, like we have in our Mishnah. But also, I skip the parentheses. Man tana im nitrama hachuma. Who is the opinion who holds that lemaisa, Reuven is chayiv in me'ilah as soon as the withdrawal is made? I'll also remember again one more time, because we have another only couple more moments. Understand what the Mishnah was expressing is a fascinating idea, which is that I gave my shekel to Reuven to give to my behalf. Reuven instead attributes it on his own behalf. So what did the Mishnah say? If the withdrawal of shekelim, the first withdrawal was already made, then the shekel that Reuven has in his hand is already consecrated, which then means that when he misappropriates it, he is committing me'ilah. So who is the opinion who says that as soon as they make the first withdrawal, that all of the shekelim are already consecrated? So the Gemara says, that's Rabbi Shimon. Don't Rabbi Shimon. Miyad haya mikaba ma'osav va'kohanim's reason hein, because ultimately they would go ahead and if you take a look at the Tikkun Charetin, Rabbi Shimon says bisof dvar I forgot what the Rashi table says. It'll come to me in just a moment. All right, it'll come to me. Miyad hayim mekabel ma'osav hamesapek karbanos hayim mekabel hamaos miyad nimtza tekev kishenitrama naase kachim mizbeach. So we'll say what the Gemara is describing over here is as soon as they would do the withdrawal, they would immediately purchase sacrificial items. So that's the pshat, meaning there was no real lag time between the actual withdrawal of the monies and the actual purchase of sacrificial items. So the Gemara says, what the Gemara is just explaining is that's why immediately after the first withdrawal, all of the half shekels, both those which have been collected and those which have not yet been collected, are immediately consecrated. He says, Vikashya. And I will say again, there seems to be a kashya, again, against the first case in the Mishnah. Ilu hagonev olaso shel chavero. If somebody were to steal the ola of his friend, Ushachto stama, and he were to shecht it stam without any intention. So the Gemara says stama lo l'shem b'alim harishonim. Excuse me, stama lo l'shem b'alim harishonim, without intent for the first owners. Mechaperes, yet it would still work. So we'll say, we see from here that lemaisa, when something is consecrated for a particular individual, that consecration remains. Amar Abiyudan tipater b'mesuyim. Oh, what's the case over here? The case over here is where the shekel that's being contributed is uniquely defined. If you take a look at the Tikkun Charetin, it's the second wide line. It says b'mesuyam shenasan hashekel mesuyam v'niskaven litrom l'shamayim. I'm giving a specific shekel, and my intention is that it should go for the Beis Hamikdash. For example, he says Michel Beis Rabbi Gamliel shayim miskaven v'dofal l'beis chupa. We'll see this later on. That Lemaisa, what they used to do in Rabbi Gamliel's home is they wanted to make sure that their shekel would actually be taken. Because remember, there are a lot of people who contribute shekelim and their shekelim remain in the pot. In Rabbi Gamliel's home, they wanted to make sure that their shekel would actually be withdrawn. So they waited to go ahead and actually contribute the half shekel until the treasurer was emptying out the collection boxes. And what they would do is they would actually toss their half shekel right in front of the treasure. So it would just automatically get swooped in to the actual withdrawal. The chashlomar, shemishinayim noflin, because otherwise one would be concerned that perhaps the half shekel would go into the shrine, the leftover pot. V'chiyesh mi'ila b'shirayim, and is there mi'ila with shirayim? Eller k'ay meir, rather it's reflexive view of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, or Rabbi Meir says, molin b'shirayim, that there is mi'ila even with the leftover funds. So the Gemara says, Oti b'mesuyam shabbos Rabbi Gamliel, k'shayim eskaven v'tarma lushmo. So I will say the keys over here must be where Lemaisa, again, the individual Reuven, who has gone ahead and hijacked my shekel, he has in mind dafka to give this particular shekel to the Beis HaMikdash as his half shekel obligation, and therefore Lemaisa, reflecting the view of Rabbi Shimon, who holds that once the first withdrawal has been made, all of the shekelim become consecrated. Therefore, again, not only have I not fulfilled my obligation, obviously, but he has committed an evil. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara goes weiter. Manana. So if you take a look over here, so the Gemara says the following. If you donated a shekel that was already kodesh, then in reality, what have you benefited? We'll say, so what the Gemara is really asking is, why is it that Reuven has committed Mi'ila? In reality, he hasn't done anything, because he has essentially given something that is already consecrated. Gemara says, no, I'll tell you why, because why? He has benefited how? Because remember, also going back, what did we learn? That if you don't contribute your half shekel, what would Beis Din do? They would seize property from you to get you to give the half shekel. Now that he is given the appearance that he's given half shekel, even though he hasn't, he stole my half shekel. But now what? He saved himself from having any collateral taken. That in and of itself is a benefit, which would make him chayev in mi'ila. Vayter, mimayisr sheni, dechsev, ach bechor, ashe yirakel Hashem avahema, lo yaktish ish oso. So also, what does the Torah say? That by Ma'aser Sheni, anything that is, or actually it's not just Ma'aser Sheni, it's Bechor Behema also. So he says the following. He says, Ach Bechor Asher Yivakir LaHashem HaBehema. If you have a Behemas Bechor, an animal, firstborn animal, so lo yakdish ish oso. So what happens? A person can consecrate it for another sacrificial purpose. Why? Well, say, because once it's a Bechor, it's already Kodesh. What do we see from here? Koshu Kodesh in Kiddusha Chal Alav. Rabbi says, it's very interesting. Once something already has a consecrated status, you cannot confer another consecrated status on top of it. Where do we see that from? The Torah says that if you have a Bechor animal, firstborn animal is Kodesh, belongs to the Kohen. I can't choose to what? To make that animal a carbon, or to make that animal hektish for something else. Because once it's Kodesh, so we see from the Rabbosai that once you have a state of Kiddusha on a particular object, you cannot confer another state. That's why if you have money that's already Ma'aser Sheni, what can't you do with it? You can't use it for half shekel. Why? Because once it's Ma'aser Sheni or it has a state of Kiddusha, you can't confer another state of Kiddusha on top of it. So the Gemara says, Keturosa, so what should you do? So we'll say, so now let's say I did. Let's say I set aside this Ma'aser Sheni money now as half shekel. So what should I do? Keturosa, maybe sell a shekel and I bring another coin, a chulin coin, a non-consecrated coin. V'omer ma'os Ma'aser Sheni b'chol makom sheni hu mechulalin al selazu. What this is talking about over here is, let's say I went to the Beis HaMikdash already. And what happens? Everybody's oy vavoy. The money that I have, this is my Ma'aser Sheni money. So what do I do now? So the Gemara says the following. Very simple. What you do is, you essentially transfer Ma'aser Sheni sanctity onto another coin. onto another coin. You could go in and take another sela, and what happens? You go and you say, Ma'os Ma'is Hashem B'chamokum Shein Yom Mechulal Ma'asel Azu. The money of Ma'is Hashemi should be redeemed onto this coin, this new coin. Va'os Ha'sela Nitpas L'Shem Ma'is Hashemi. And ultimately, again, this sela will be the Ma'is Hashemi money. V'Hashar Na'asu Shkalim. And the remainder money, the original money, ultimately could go ahead and be counted as shkol. All right, let me say. Shkol, yeah.